Dream job or nightmare? It's hard to know if a career that looks great on paper will actually lead you to the life you want to live. So welcome to Dream Job Cafe. I'm Larry Port. I'll be asking different professionals the questions you won't find anywhere else. So grab a coffee, settle in. This is Dream Job Cafe. Hi, everyone. I'm Larry Port. This is the Dream Job Cafe podcast. I'm here with Emily Bowes, and she is a managing director at Transition Overwatch. And she helps veterans transition into civilian jobs. So she has a wealth of information about the job market. And specifically, we're going to hear something pretty exciting about what are called middle skilled or new collar jobs. Emily, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. I'm excited.
Yeah. So before we get into that, I want to really dig into what you do, because you have an interesting job yourself, and I'd love to hear a little bit about it.
Yeah, absolutely. So I work for a company called Transition Overwatch. It's a startup. So I do a little bit of everything. I know you're familiar with startups. So essentially what we do, we have two real customers. We have companies and we have veterans, and we work with both. So for companies, we help them attract and retain more veteran talent through our structured employment program, where we provide a structure and support to the veterans, and the companies just get to hire them like they normally would. And we sort of bolt on our retention program for their first 1 to 2 years of employment. And then for the veterans, heard already a little bit about what we do for them, but essentially we help them connect with employers who want to hire more veterans. And then we provide that structured program that gives them wraparound support. It gives them a clear growth path and access to some optimized benefits. So honestly, it ends up really being a win-win for both sides. And we see really good retention for the veterans. I think, you know, our programs are typically between 1 to 2 years long. And right now, our average retention of folks that have gone through our program is pushing up 3 years. So we see people stay for quite a while, even beyond the length of the program, which is great. My role in that constantly changes and evolves. I've been involved in the business development side. I talk to veterans on a day-to-day basis and try to help, you know, understand what they're trying to do next in their careers, their motivations, their goals, and if our programs can help support that. I talk to trade schools. In the last year, I've built a bunch of partnerships with different schools. I have done recruiting. I've been with this same company and the same CEO for, I believe, about 8 years, 7 or 8 years. And we started as a recruiting company focused on manufacturing. And in that role, I really like owned and grew. I had never done recruiting before. So I came in and started learning, kind of grew to the point where I basically owned this large manufacturing client. I worked directly with their CEO and their executive team. And I helped, I think I placed like 90 people with them over the course of 3 years, including like all their plant managers and every level of the organization on the manufacturing side and the corporate side from top to bottom. And, you know, really got to know them well and got to know more about manufacturing. When I thought about manufacturing before I worked with these guys, I thought about Lucille Ball, like popping chocolates in her mouth on the assembly line. Right. That was my reference for manufacturing. But I just learned so much that, I mean, there's so much more that goes into these jobs and running these facilities. And you would ever think I got to tour a couple of them. Yeah, it's incredibly complex. And there's incredible opportunities to grow and learn and develop skills in these arenas. So that got me really excited for kind of this skilled workforce, that sort of middle skilled, new collar workforce. And then as Transition Overwatch has evolved over the last 5 years, we really shifted focus to working exclusively with veterans, doing the programs that we do now. And those are heavily focused, I would say, on these sort of new collar is one term, or middle skilled jobs. And yeah, I've done a lot of recruiting in that, but I've also done a lot of like behind the scenes process development, working on workflows, operations.
And then the sales component, because you're doing a lot of phone calls, right, with people. Am I correct in that you're probably on the phone with a lot of different people a large part of the day, would you say?
A large part of the day, yes.
Yeah. And so the other question I wanted to have for you is two-part, because I would think
a lot of people want to be part. There's a lot of, for those that don't know, there's a lot of companies that have a mission-driven aspect to them. Like you might know about Toms with the shoes or Bombas with the socks. They, you know, they donate right. a pair to people. Can you talk a little bit about that and if that adds an extra dimension to your work? Because I think we all respect veterans and like the idea that they're getting help.
Absolutely. Well, if I could say something just about recruiting, because sure. I feel like recruiting gets a little bit of a bad rep right now because people somehow view recruiters as like emblematic of the hiring market. But recruiting itself can be really meaningful work. One of the first, I think the first person I ever placed in a job was actually a mechanic that I just found on LinkedIn. There's a lot of research that goes into recruiting. And I somehow got this guy's phone number and called him and was just like, hey, I have this opportunity for you that I think you'd be a good fit for. I had done sales previously, and it's a very similar skill set. And so I just told him, hey, I think this would be great for you. Is this something you'd want to check out? And he was like, okay. He wasn't in the job market at all. And he was just stuck in a dead end job and got him this opportunity for this kind of next step up, traveling, getting to represent his company, getting to like do a much higher level of responsibility. And it totally changed his life. And I was like, wow, this is amazing. Like I can actually help people find jobs that like change the course yeah. of their life. And so that was really cool intro just to recruiting generally. And then, you know, what we're doing now with Transition Overwatch, I think adds an even further level of meaning to that work because not only helping veterans, military transition is incredibly difficult. There's so many things that have to change, so many moving parts. The military doesn't always make it easy. And so, you know, there's a lot of different things that veterans are having to handle as they're moving through transition. And then they don't always know where they fit in the civilian marketplace. They don't always know how to, you know, bring their skills to the table. And there's just a number of different challenges. And so being able to come alongside folks and navigate that with them and then see them be successful. And because we work with them for, you know, a long time after that initial job placement, we get to really see their careers take off. I mean, almost everyone that we have, you know, placed over the course of the last few years, that's been in their jobs for 2 to 3 years. I mean, most of them got promoted to the next level within the time that they were in our program because they're strong, go-getter people, and we get to see them build actual careers. And something my boss has always been really keen on is this idea that success for us is not job placement. And I think for a lot of folks, that's their success metric. And that's okay. But for us with veterans, not only getting them into the job, but providing that additional layer of support for 1 or 2 years, being able to help them navigate, you know, some of those just tricky conversations that you and I don't always know how to navigate, where it's like, my manager came in and sent me this email and it's vague and I don't know what to do about it. Am I in trouble? Am I not? What do I say?
Yes.
And, you know, communication styles between military and civilian are very different. And so helping them navigate just some of those ticky-tacky, tricky situations and get through that transition just into excelling in their careers has been incredible. And they're amazing, amazing people. And so it absolutely is meaningful work. And yeah, I'm really grateful to get to be part of it for sure.
So for those that are kind of new to the ballgame, like Gen Zers, I know it's very important for people, for some of you at least, to like kind of work with a mission. And it doesn't necessarily mean you have to work for a nonprofit. You can work for a profit company. And this was kind of, but there is kind of made fun of in the show Silicon Valley. They say like, we're making the world a better place because of our API endpoints to be able to pull data or whatever. So there's a lot of like corporate garbage out there, but there are organizations doing great things. So it's just a side note that it might be something you want to look for. Now, Emily, in your particular job, like do you work, let's just give some quick hits so people can get a sense of what working like as a recruiter, albeit specialized, is like. Is it 40 hours a week? Is it 9 to 5 or what's it like?
Varies. Mm-hmm. I've had times where I've worked 70 hour weeks and times where I've worked 30 hour weeks. Kind of depends on what's going on in the workload.
So is it like project oriented maybe? Is that why?
Yeah, I think it depends on your client, if you will. If you're recruiting, is really broad. If you're in-house, if you're external, how much they have going on. With what I'm doing right now, I probably work, 40, 45 hours a week, something like that. Sometimes a little more, sometimes a little less. Right now, because I'm working on our own internal projects and with our internal clients, it's a little more flexible than when I'm working directly for like a large account managing a lot of different roles.
Gotcha. And what about like work-life balance? Like, are you able to do things outside of work that you want to be able to pursue?
Yeah, I think so. I have a level of flexibility to manage my calendar and manage my appointments, which is nice.
Gotcha. Now, I would imagine skill-wise and aptitude-wise, I mean, you're very like smooth on the phone. You're a good talker. So I would think that's a skill. What do you need to be detail oriented to go through lists of people? You need to be a good researcher. Like what makes a good recruiter?
That's a good question. I think I made some notes when I'm looking off screen a little bit, but skills for recruiting and I think sales are very similar. I think they're very similar types of jobs. I've done both here and there. I think being able to quickly build rapport with people and then get them to open up to you about what they're really looking for, what they're trying to do, their underlying motivations and desires. I think that might be one of the biggest skill sets, because the worst thing is getting someone all the way through a process and then finding out they weren't really being honest with you about what they were trying to do or what they were looking for. Being able to ask clarifying questions, being able to communicate in a way that's compelling about an opportunity and kind of sell people, if you will, on the job or the location or the opportunity, taking lots and lots of notes, follow-up communication really is everything. And I think being able to think creatively, some level of critical thinking and creativity to go, okay, these are the things you're telling me that you want, and this is what I'm seeing in the market. So how do I make those two things mesh? Or what search terms, what other things, what other titles could do this? What other industries have similar skills to what you need that, maybe would be applicable, because I can't find anybody who can do this right now. So for different roles, we've looked at like transitioning teachers who maybe have really great organizational skills and could step into a supervisory role. And there's a surplus of those people in the market, and there's not people with the skill set that I'm looking for.
Southwest Airlines used to hire teachers a lot for like flight attendant roles and
I could totally see that.
Is the role of the recruiter taking on more prominence right now because of this problem with the applicant tracking systems? And for those of you that don't know, companies are asking, and if you're in the job market, you definitely know that you have to submit to websites. But what happens on the employer side is that there's like a ton of resumes and it's hard to make any sense out of that. So I don't know, is the role of the recruiter helping this situation by bypassing all that noise, or is that not part of the equation right now?
I think ATSs get a little unfairly demonized. And I will say there are applications and things coming into play with AI. We're not using that. I know a lot of companies are using that to a light level, but an ATS is just a glorified CRM. It's just keeping track. It's a database of resumes and people's information. And the main thing that most recruiters will tell you gets you knocked out of an application process quickly is you just don't answer the questions we ask in the application, or the answers that you give are disqualifying in some way. Like, this hiring manager told me, absolutely will not hire someone who does not have a bachelor's degree for this role. No way around it. If you tell me you don't have a bachelor's, I'm probably not even going to see you, because maybe I get 500 applications and I set a filter to say, if they check a box that says I do not have a bachelor's degree, they're getting automatically rejected. And so that's how the ATS plays into all of it, is that it's just a filter. It's just a filtering system. And I think there's this idea of this like evil ATS. It's like keeping you from getting a job. And I would say from my experiences and what I've seen, that's really not the case. But also, I mean, the recruiter is the person who is usually sitting there and trying to interpret between the hiring manager and what they're saying that they need. And like I was saying, what's available in the market, and trying to bridge those gaps. And I think the thing that people miss out on with recruiters is they want to help you get a job. Like, recruiters want to get people in jobs. That's the whole deal that recruiters are trying to do. success metric is getting people hired. So they're out there trying to do that, you know?
I liked using them. When I was in charge of my company, I found it very helpful because what it allowed us to do was just concentrate on the work at hand and let the recruiters sift through the resumes. So, you know, instead of like us having looked through 100 resumes, we'd only have to look through like maybe 4 or 5 and then we interview them.
Exactly.
So there's a lot of employers like using them for the candidates out there that are thinking about it. Emily, let's shift gears right now. Let's talk a little bit about these middle-skilled or new-collar jobs. So I'm going to quote an article from the Wall Street Journal. This article says, the title is, if this will get your attention, well, it's supposed to, it's a headline, they are hot, upwardly mobile jobs. Here's why they are so hard to fill. And this was published back in April, earlier of this year, but it just caught my attention and I saved it. It says, many of the fastest growing jobs with upward mobility stem from a class of careers that defy traditional blue and white collar labels. Somewhere in the middle, they require a modest level of tech infused skills, not a college degree, and can pay in the high 5 figures and eventually more in areas such as healthcare, information technology, and energy production. Radiation therapists, nuclear technicians, and air traffic controllers is pointed out later. So is this what you're talking about when you're talking about middle skill jobs?
Yes, that's exactly it. It's this class of jobs that don't necessarily need a college degree. Some of them give you on-the-job training. Some of them you might have to go to a technical school or a trade school for. Usually don't require you to get into debt or not a significant amount. Some of them you can get grants or things to pay for, and they get you to work very quickly. Sometimes you're working while you're going to school in the thing you're training for. So it's very much designed to get you into the workforce and build you up with those skills really quickly.
So what might you say to somebody who's like just hearing about this for the first time? Like, what thread should they pull to figure this out or understand what these things are?
That's a great question. I think that this area of the workforce has been very poorly branded. We were talking before about how middle skills is a terrible name, you know? And I think, you know, for folks that are my age, I'm like an elder millennial. I saw people talk down about these type of jobs. I experienced it myself. I went to school for radiology out of high school. I actually always wanted to be a medical doctor. That was the only thing I ever wanted to do growing up. And my parents were like, why don't you try doing something in the medical field first to see if you even like working in medicine before you commit to a decade and hundreds of thousands of dollars. So I ended up, through a series of events, deciding to go to school for radiology. It took 2 years. I was actually working by the time I was done with my first year. I had enough competencies that I was able to get a job as a student tech. And, you know, in 2006, I was already making, I think it was like $18.75 an hour as an unlicensed student tech, getting started in that field, working while I was going to school. So, you know, that's pretty good, especially for that time. And was able to just learn and immediately apply my skills and build and build and build, you know, competency so that by the time I graduated, I was fully capable of working, you know, anywhere that I wanted to go to work with that. And I enjoyed that. It wasn't my ultimate passion, but things that I liked about it, I did not really have any debt. My parents covered half. It was $5,000 at that point. My parents paid for half. I got a city workforce grant for the other half. I was able to pay my parents back pretty quickly. And, you know, I was like 21 years old and making, you know, $40,000 to $50,000 a year, depending on what shifts and things I was doing. And, you know, in 2007, at that point, that was a pretty good place to be.
Yeah.
And there was a lot of growth potential. That's something that I think people need to understand about these types of jobs. The entry point is just that. These are not dead-end jobs. The entry point is a starting spot, and then there's room to grow. So there's a lot in radiology specifically. There's a lot of different modalities you can go into and continue to learn and grow your skills and grow your income. Or if you want to, you can go back to school. You can move into management. You can become an instructor. There's a lot of different directions that you can go. And I think that's true of virtually all of these jobs. Is that, you know, they have paths for growth, pathways for increasing your income, but you're going to be able to get to work much more quickly. I think the other thing that, you know, if people are looking for a job and they're not sure if this sort of middle skilled area would be good, one thing to note about it, most of these jobs are going to be hands-on. These are not computer-based jobs. These are mostly not jobs you're going to do remotely. These are going to be, you know, something where you're going somewhere every single day. You're potentially working a shift. In some ways, that can provide more flexibility depending on the environment that you're in. In some ways, less. You know, I knew some women who only worked weekend nights and they made a ton of money and they loved it. And they were just like this little gang of these three kind of younger moms. They worked three weekend nights every single week and then they had the whole week with their kids. You know, there's things like that that you can do to have a level of flexibility to give you maybe a little more of the lifestyle that you might want. A lot of these healthcare and even in trades in a lot of different areas, they're shift-based work. And sometimes that can actually afford you more flexibility than you might think. When I was going to school, there were three women, I think they were young moms, who worked weekend nights only. They worked Friday, Saturday, Sunday. They made a ton of money because they made their base pay and some differentials for being on weekends and nights.
Yeah, like overtime type style pay, right?
Right. Well, not even overtime, but most of the time, if you work afternoons or evenings, you make more money per hour on top of your normal pay. So like afternoons might be a dollar more and evenings might be $3 more and then weekends might be $5 more. So if I remember correctly, like let's say they were making 28 or 30 for easy math, $30 an hour because they were pretty experienced, then they're making an extra $5 for weekends and an extra $3 for being on nights. So they're making like $38 an hour just because they're doing that shift. So, and that's true in manufacturing settings. That's true in a lot of settings where, you know, you're either going to have opportunities for overtime or shift or differential type of pay.
So for job seekers out there right now, two points I want to make. Number one is that this sector of the labor market is like in like, there's, it's just high demand. You talk to anybody, and we're talking middle skilled trades, but in a lot of different trades, you hear people saying, oh, we used to have a guy that did that, but he retired. So, and then you look and you see the news about what's happening with the air traffic controllers. They can't find enough people. So they're trying to get gamers in to work as air traffic controllers. Yeah. Yeah, it makes a lot of sense because blips on the screen. Hopefully they're not zapping them, but
super, super high attention to detail, though, and ability to multitask.
Yes. And yeah, exactly right. So the other thing is that the other thing that's in the news is that these companies that are pursuing AI feverishly, they're racing against each other and they're each sitting on huge stockpiles of cash. They're building data centers all over, and data centers require boilermakers, HVAC people, plumbers, welders, all these different types of like trades that are like highly, highly skilled that they need. So one question I have is that, let's say that you go to college and you have this like idea that you're going to be a white collar person. And I don't know how to really ask this because to some extent, there is some sort of, to some extent, looking down on trades from college graduates. But then again, a lot of them, I know cops that went to college. I know people that went back to culinary school and became chefs. This is not that different. So like, mm-hmm. Is there any words of wisdom or any thought about people who might like need to be nudged towards this direction, potentially?
That's a great question. I mean, I worked at Starbucks with people who had master's degrees. So, I mean, if you can do that, you can certainly do this. I think that one thing I would say that I think is really compelling about this type of work is that you actually get to see the tangible results of what you're doing in real life. You know, if you're helping build a data center, you're actually seeing that building go up. You know, if you're in a factory or, you know, a plant and you're, you know, building tires or you're building box trucks or whatever, you actually see those go out the door and then you see them out in the community. You get to see in real time the impact that you're making. And I think there's something really grounding and fulfilling about that for people that gets missed in our totally digital world. And especially for people that don't enjoy sitting at a desk all day. And so, you know, if you're either disrupted by AI or you know, are not finding a job in this white collar space, you might consider, what are the things, you know, that I enjoy doing? Do you like sitting at a desk all day? You know, do you like doing, you know, working hands on at all? If not, the actual technical jobs are not the only ones in this space. There's a lot of support that goes into making these things run. Like when I was hiring people for manufacturing, I was hiring supervisors, operations folks, people that did quality, people that did operations. They need supply chain. They need HR people. They need people that are good at management. They need compliance and safety folks. Like there's a lot of different roles that go into running any sort of operation. You mentioned building data centers, you know, all of these companies need IT people. They all need cybersecurity people, you know, so even some of those more typical white collar type of roles are often still needed in these more skilled spaces. And I think that people lose sight of that sometimes by just thinking, oh, you know, this is a factory. The only thing I can do is like put together a widget. And I'll say, some of those widgets, very complex. You know, if you're building a semiconductor chip, you know, that's a very, very complex piece of machinery. And there's a lot of skill and knowledge that goes into even doing that. So I think there's a lot more to these areas than meets the eye.
Or 747 for that matter, you know?
Or 747. And with what you were saying about the retirements, just in aviation alone, speaking of 747, there's a massive need. I host a podcast talking about workforce things for the skilled trades, and I've talked to a lot of folks in aviation recently. And, you know, if anybody is interested, shameless plug for my show, if you're interested in this space, you should come check out my show, because a lot of the people I'm talking to are specifically doing workforce development in this space.
What's the show called? Doesn't
necessarily have a name right now. We're calling it the Emily Bow Show, but it's live on LinkedIn. You can just find me on LinkedIn and you'll see all the episodes. I think I'm pushing about 30 episodes right now. I think by the end of the week, we'll be about there. So I've talked to people. I talked to someone today in automotive. I've talked to folks in aviation and transportation, in heavy equipment, in construction, in a bunch of different areas. A lot of veterans, but a lot of folks, other folks too. And a lot of these industries are intentionally trying to bring in more non-traditional talent. They want people to be represented that haven't necessarily been in these industries before. And so I think if you have even considered them in the past and maybe not felt like that was a place you could fit, or there wasn't representation of people who looked like you or seemed like your kind of vibe or your kind of background in these skilled workforce in the past, I think you might be surprised at what these companies are doing to try to create more inclusivity, more belonging, more welcoming culture for lots of different types of people, especially women, people of color, veterans. They're really trying to make sure that everyone feels welcome in this workforce because the need is very great.
Yeah. Also, for those that are entrepreneurial minded, it's a great stepping stone to running your own place. So with that,
yes. I read today 28% of people that go into the skilled trades specifically start their own businesses, compared to I think like 8% of the general workforce. So your likelihood of being able to start a business successfully if you have some skills in this kind of space is much higher.
That's fantastic. And we're going to be talking a lot about entrepreneurship. I'm a big believer in, because it allows you to control your own destiny. Emily. So you can find Emily Bowes, spelled like the speaker, on LinkedIn. She has her podcast live there. And I want to thank everybody for tuning in. Emily, thank you very much. Please like us. That really helps with our show. And if you can, be grateful today for something.